let's get out to the Banner Brothers hotline and bring in our special guest from the Deseret News. He's the don't challenge him to a game of golf or a match of golf, because he will take your money. Dick Harmon, how you doing?
I'm doing good, fellas. How's it going? Ben and Brian, good to talk to you.
Yeah, Brian Logan, Boostability Brian.
Brian Logan. Dick knows when I have my interviews, I used to speak with it to him in that tone.
You would enunciate all the
consonants.
Oh,
I was very professional.
Very, very professional. Is that true, Dick?
I don't know. I try to be. I try to be upfront with people, and I talk to them, and they know where I'm coming from, and they hopefully know what I need and what I want, and I'm respectful of them. I'm appreciative.
No,
I
know you're a professional, Dick. I'm talking about Brian. Was Brian professional? Was Brian, forthright, and what did he enunciate his R's and his E's?
Brian was totally professional. I remember, I like talking to him in a relaxed setting at Riverside Country Club. He was helping out as an intern. For First Colony Mortgage, they had a great spread out there. Do you remember, Brian, we came out there on that patio? They had a temporary clubhouse, and, we were hanging out talking, and that's the kind of thing I like.
I love it. Dick Harmon from the Deseret News. Dick, you just put out an article, I believe it was yesterday. You were able to catch up with the sixth most winningest coach in college football history, Lavelle Edwards. His name is on that stadium. The stadium is named after him. What did you learn? Were you in this same group? How did you get Lavelle to chat with you about this stuff?
Well, the tournament that he was at Riverside was a fundraiser for the Boys and Girls Club of Utah County. The sponsors of that and the public relations firm that did the marketing for it contacted members of the media, said, hey, we'll make Lavelle Edwards available to you from 8 to 9 to talk. They mentioned that it would be exclusive, but that's not exactly true because a lot of people showed up. We didn't do it as a group. We did it one-on-one, which was kind of exclusive, but I kind of jumped the gun. I saw him getting out of his car in the parking lot, and before he ever made it to where the other people were, I caught him right at the trunk of his car, and we just had a chat for about 7 to 8 minutes, and I did an interview, and the thing that stood out about it is Lavelle Edwards is not a whiner. He's not making excuses for NFL draft, for missionaries, for this, that, or the other. He doesn't whine. He just tells it like it is. He could care less if people think of what he's saying as, up to what they think it should be. But he just speaks from the heart. He's truthful. He's politically savvy. You try to bushwhack him with a couple of questions, he sees right through. He knows exactly what to say, what not to say. He does the political correctness dance a little bit, but not too much. And I like talking to Lavelle. I always have. Practices, I used to go and sit in the golf cart with him and talk. That would never happen now.
Yeah, it's true. I'm glad that you were proactive. You got a little bit more time. You got some great information from Lavelle. Let me ask you this. It seems like, and maybe this is just my perception, so I want to get your opinion. Over the last 5 years or so, does it seem like BYU has made more excuses rather than to try to find answers about this particular subject with NFL draft picks and development of NFL talent?
I think that BYU followers have made excuses. I think people have tried to reason why this, that, and the other, and tried to explain it. I don't know that Bronco has set up and said, okay, here's an excuse for what we're doing, A, B, C, and D. I don't know that I've exactly heard that. I wouldn't say that I've heard excuses out of BYU football coaches, out of their mouths. I couldn't say that.
Dick, what do you think the reason why there's not more BYU players getting drafted?
Well, I think they find outstanding football players who know football and know how to play the game that may or may not be NFL measurables. I think both you two are sitting behind a mic right now talking are prime examples. Brian, you played for a great defense, one of the best defenses BYU's had. A couple of years before you, they had got good defenses. I think that part of the reason is that they're recruiting a lot of people that, fit into BYU's, I think, honor code and what they expect out of student athletes, and that not isn't necessarily what the NFL is looking for. 85% have gone on missions. BYU's very proud of that, but that's not necessarily a mix for the NFL. I mean, you take a recruit, A, and you recruit him, you bring him in as a freshman, you redshirt him or you don't redshirt him, but he's there, he's on campus, he's working out, he's with a conditioning coach, he's with the recruiting class that he was recruited, they make progress, they build chemistry, they build skills, he's a sophomore, more skills, more experience, junior, he's more, you know, if you go through that process, then you might get NFL players that are they're ready to play. You have the majority of 85% who sign out of high school, maybe come, don't play, go on a two-year mission, maybe go right out of high school, which probably is better, and then come back in 2 years and then start a four-year career. That might be a little bit better. But one thing's in common, they're not playing football, and they're not practicing, and they're not lifting weights and running and doing skills and catching and passing and doing things every single day. And I think that somehow, and now I'm sounding like an excuse maker, but that that is what I've noticed as a professional about the program, which may not be true up the hill, up the street, and in other programs that you see in college football. What BYU is doing with its model is not done anywhere else in college football, in America from coast to coast.
Love it. Dick Harmon from the Deseret News on with us here, Cougar Sports, ESPN 960. I mean, that number, that percentage, 80% of these football players are returned missionaries. And on top of that, the other one that really blows me away is that 40% of the roster is gone annually. I mean, you get a 40% attrition rate on a football team in any organization, any business, and it is extremely difficult to succeed, let alone compete. And at least BYU has been competitive. They've had their ups and downs the last 3 years with their 8-5 seasons, but on the development of NFL talent front, at least they've been able to have an Ezekiel Ansah drop into their lap and boost right. their draft. I mean, first-round draft picks don't come around very often. I'll take a first-round draft pick drop into my lap any day of the week. But could it possibly be that one of these days BYU could turn the mission into a more competitive advantage? Not even a competitive advantage, but just to neutralize that disadvantage? At any point in the future, do you think?
I don't know. Lavelle kind of poo-pooed the idea that missions are a problem at all, and that's his opinion. There's another way to look at this. BYU as a football program is the 18th winningest program in the last 10 years, so that you're comparing apples to oranges, but they have better winning percentage at 70%, better than Missouri, West Virginia, Cincinnati, Clemson, Auburn, Nebraska, Utah, Oklahoma State, South Carolina, Michigan State, I mean, you go on, Notre Dame, they're winning at a greater percentage. Now, the schedules are not the same, but BYU is a very successful football program. I think that this new change in letting people go right out of high school at 18, I think that we still don't know the results of that. It may be really a real boost to BYU football players and to athletics in general, that right during those uncomfortable years when you're just getting to be a kid and growing into manhood, you're on a mission, and then you come back, you're a little bit more mature academically, physically, spiritually, mentally, and then you start your football career for 4 years. You're getting through your education a little bit earlier than some of the ones that would go at 19 or 20. Maybe the NFL looks at you a little bit better. I do think this. I think in the last 18 months, BYU has made a real push to improve their recruiting and to cast a wider net, and I think that we'll see the results of that in the next 2 years. I think when you look at the Louis Lapu'ahu, when you look at Tejan Karoma, when you look at a few of the linebackers that they brought in, and definitely you look at Jordan Prater and Michael Davis. I mean, these are guys that have certain skills that have been recruited or four-year players that BYU has not had over the last 4 or 5 years. So you may be setting yourself up for, two or three NFL draft picks in the next year, maybe five NFL draft picks in the next 2 years. So maybe those numbers are on the upswing. I do know that when Robert and I returned to BYU for the second time, he looked over the talent, he looked over things, and he says, we need to change. We need to change, and we need to start at the offensive line. So there's an effort to do some things different that have been done, 3 or 4 years ago.
What did you think of Lavelle Edwards' approach on recruiting and also development of NFL talent? He stated, "I never took the position that it was my job to develop NFL players. We just took the best players we could find and went from there."
Well, I think it's true. And I think the other part of what he said is that they caught college football by surprise. They had an edge. They knew it. And back in those days, I don't know if you guys were following BYU football there personally or in person or on TV, what could be broadcast.
I was in the spirit world when they were, you know, when they were just killing it. So was Brian.
Well, I don't know what that means, but yep.
I'll give you a quick example of what it was like. Defenses would come out, and they would be cross-eyed. They had no clue what to do. And, you know, until... New Mexico ended up sacking Jim McMahon 10 times and beating BYU down in Albuquerque back in 79. You know, until then, people really didn't have any idea what to do. They just brought a 10-man bear front and they went after him, and maybe that helped a little bit. But I remember games when literally Jim McMahon and others would say laugh when they got a holding penalty, because then it would be second and 20 or 25 or whatever, and they would say, good, now we can get more yards. We've been backed up, and now we got a longer field because we will get 400 yards passing. We will have 5 touchdown passes. And, you know, there was a time in the 80s and 90s when defenses had no idea. So back then, BYU had an edge, and now it's hard for them because, you know, defenses have had NFL influences upon them and what they do with their schemes. And they're catching up, and they're able to, manage BYU's offense so much better.
Let me ask you this: Lavelle mentions a number of different guys that were tremendous talents in the coaching world. Ted Tolner, Doug Scoville, Norm Chow, all these guys were amazing. And you know what? They weren't getting paid a whole lot. Probably they were worth a whole lot more than what they were getting paid at BYU. How was Lavelle Edwards able to get these guys to come to BYU? And have them stick around for a certain amount of time?
You know, that's a great question. I should have asked him. I know that, we got to talk about Fred Whittingham also, who was with the Oakland Raiders, and he came in, and he really was the backbone of BYU's early defenses that were outstanding, the ones that featured Tom Holmoe, the one that went undefeated in, 1984. I think he was part of that staff, if not then, the first bowl win in 1980 against SMU. But, they weren't paying that much money back in those days. I think they'd be lucky to get $35,000 or $40,000 a year for a coach, because back then they were, kind of seen as old gym teachers, and you just throw some money at them and give them a couple of classes that they had to teach and let them wear around sweats and shorts and, stinky socks and shoes and a little whistle around. You didn't have a situation where you're paying an assistant coach $1 million a year. And a lot of these guys were kind of nomads. They kind of went from one job to another. They looked for stability. They never got big paychecks. And he just was a brilliant genius at assembling some of these personalities, have a unique thought and foresight about a game, a passing game, and bringing them together and letting them operate and experiment and do their thing. And it was a brilliant move on Lavelle's part.
Let's move on from that subject. We got Dick Harmon from the Deseret News on with us here, Cougar Sports, ESPN 960. What do you make of the Bowlesby comments? What do you make of the flip-flopping that has gone on since, July of 2014? So July of 2014, he says, nah, we're good. I like our path to the championship. In December, before the college football playoff snub, he's talking about how, we don't know what we're going to do as far as the college as far as the conference championship game is concerned. After the snub, he said, well, they should have told us that. And now, before the meetings in Arizona, he stated that he talked to the college football playoff committee and they advised him to have a conference championship game. So he said, oh, that's what we're going to go and do. 7 days later, they're not going to do it. Is this who's running the Big 12? How are they running it? And why would BYU even want to be a part of that conference besides money?
Well, part of it is this. You have a commissioner like they've had whose job is to meet with the media and talk to them, and then he's trying to be accommodating. But he answers to athletic directors and presidents. And those are the governing body of what he does. And so he's trying to answer questions and post things, the nature of what college football is. And then he goes behind the scenes and talks to these guys, and he finds out this is probably the broadest general salad, fruit salad group of people that he's ever got with. And these people may be supposed experts in the field, but in a lot of ways they're not. They're administrators. They're former coaches a long, long, long time ago. And they're all looking for one thing, money. They're all looking for one thing, how to enhance our budgets, how to get better facilities, how to pay our coaches, how to get to pay bills. So that's what's governing their thinking process. And the poor administrator, he just turned around in circles. He's cross-eyed. It's kind of funny, actually.
They don't care about winning no more, Brian. They care about that money.
It's not pure anymore,
the
man.
The Benjamins.
I understand.
Yeah, it's the bottom line, right?
Do you guys think that if they don't have a playoff in the Big 12, a championship game, do you think a week later when they're starting to choose the playoff, that once again that committee's going to look at it and says, you know what, these guys are the odd apple here and they're not with the program, let's just ding them again?
Well, this is the
thing. I think that'll happen.
Well, you know, you hope it happens, but yeah. This is how the Big 12 is viewing it. And this is what I think, and you can agree or disagree with me if you want, Dick. But the Big 12 views itself as a stronger conference than the ACC across the board. They're more competitive. They have better football. Now, the ACC got lucky last year with a Florida State team that was run by Jameis Winston, a first-round, number one overall pick quarterback. I think the Big 12 of Bowlesby, the ADs, are looking over at the ACC and they're thinking, there's no way a one-loss ACC team that is a conference champion gets ahead of us if we have even a one-loss TCU or Baylor coming in. I think that they will, because of maybe the strength of schedule in their round-robin format, I think they think they will surpass or jump that ACC team that really doesn't have that good of a strength of schedule.
I could see them taking that, but they've also got to protect their own strength of schedule. You know, Baylor's schedule was a joke.
Yeah, their non-conference schedule is horrible. Both TCU and, all those teams, we broke them down here on the show. 2015 schedules and 2016 schedules, there's maybe one or two teams. Texas and Oklahoma are the only two teams that really got the memo.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that committee is, I think you're going to be very interesting how they break down things again. And you know, if you come from conferences, these committee members are from other conferences and from schools and even non-Power 5 schools, and they're looking at that and says, you know, this league did not extend itself into another game. It did not play another game against a quality opponent, the best in the league against itself, like the Big 10 did, like the Big 12 did, like the ACC did. They did not do that. So, you know, in their minds, they could dock them again, and I think they will.
Check this out, Dick. Let me break this down for you. Baylor Bears, their first three games for next season. Northwestern State Demons.
Wait, what?
At least they might be better than Wagner. I don't know, the Seahawks.
See if they got a Walmart in that city.
SMU Mustangs and then the Rice Owls.
Hmm.
Yeah. TCU is going against South Dakota Jackrabbits, Arkansas, and the SMU Mustangs. At least they got Arkansas on there.
How many of those are on the road for those two teams, for TCU?
So for TCU, the only road game there is SMU. Baylor Bears, their road game is versus Rice.
So TCU, the only three games, they're going to get on a bus and they're going to go 26 miles to SMU.
Yeah, that's a home game.
Yeah.
Maybe 13 miles.
I would consider that a home game.
Yep.
There you go.
Yep.
You know what's interesting? If they have a stronger non-conference schedule, they don't have a title game. Is there still an issue? What do you think?
Oh yeah, I mean because of the non-conference scheduling, it's about strength of schedule, right?
Okay.
For instance, Dick, chime in here. Texas has Notre Dame, UTEP, and then Cal. That's solid enough. Because of Notre Dame and their prestige.
Solid enough if they're in a situation that TCU was in last year, they
get in. You know, maybe. I don't know. It depends on how good Notre Dame is. But then Oklahoma, I like this. Houston, decent enough. ULM, so Louisiana Monroe, they've been okay. And then Ohio State, your defending national champion. So if you beat the defending national champion, then, That's you're sitting pretty once that college football playoff committee starts evaluating straight the schedule.
Absolutely, I agree with you. I mean, you know, that's what you do. I think it depends on who you play and where you play them and how many miles you have to travel in between games. And I think I'd also look to see if one of them was a Thursday game after you played Saturday. I mean, all those things are going to go into account. And, you know, that committee's looking for reasons to put an Ohio State or a Wisconsin above somebody else and let them in. And the same thing with the Pac-12. They're looking at where they played, who they played, and, you know, the kind of challenges that they had. And, you know, Baylor, it's just not getting it done. It just is not. And I like Baylor. I like the way their offense is. I like Art Briles. I like his system. He's a former high school coach in Texas and made a quick rise. I'm a Baylor fan. But, you know, come on. You got to be serious about your schedule. You really do.
Yeah, they didn't get the memo, Dick. I don't know what went on in their heads, but they did not get the memo. And Bowlesby doesn't know what a memo is. I don't know what the ADs are thinking either, because they just keep flip-flopping. I mean, it's ludicrous how many times they have gone back and forth in the last year and a half. Ridiculous. If there's any company out there, like just a big-name company, you name it, say Apple kept on flip-flopping about a particular controversial competitive issue like this, you'd be thinking, oh my gosh, man, they need new leadership, right? I mean, this is definitely just mind-boggling to me. Dick, we got to let you go. We appreciate you coming on with us, as always. Great insight. Real quick before we let you go, though, I forgot to ask you this question. Cost of attendance, will it positively affect the recruiting process for BYU?
I don't think it'll hurt, but more important, it's just sent a signal publicly. Hey, we will pay as much, and we'll have as much skin in the game as anybody. Mm-hmm. And so look what we're doing, and we're not shying away. We're not scared. We're upping it up, and we're going to be in the upper echelon, and we belong, so invite us. So that's the message.
There you go. Dick Harmon from the Deseret News. We look forward to doing it again. Thanks, Dick.
Thanks, fellas.